Like the fact that millions of people have shed a tear or smile at something that I made is like a cool feeling. Rayola has reached out and other big brands. It sucked. I've had to quit art. I've had to move to a different part of the country. I've had to uproot my entire life, but I'm glad that I've figured out the formula now on the other side of it.
Hey everyone, it's your host Richie Burke. Welcome back to Milwaukee Uncut, produced by StoryMark Studios in partnership with On Milwaukee and presented by Nicolet Law, the Midwest's law firm, and Central Standard Distillery. Today's episode is with Ike Winter, who has blown up recently due to his wood artistry, but this was not an overnight success. The guy has a very interesting backstory. He's only 31, but he's been a touring musician, which started in high school. He started and grew a business with his brother and my friend Andy Wines, AFW. Then he left and went to LA to manage the Dream Machine Foundation tour for Charlie Rocket. And he is back in Milwaukee. He's a woodworking artist who has generated millions and millions of views on his pieces in just the last month or so. We cover it all. We also talk about mental health. He's battled a bunch of mental health issues. I've personally battled a bunch of mental health issues. So we do get into that. Thanks again for tuning in. It's a really cool episode. I think you're going to enjoy. Let's dive in with Ike Winter.
How old are you?
31.
Yeah. Yeah, you've packed a lot into 31 years.
I just change it up every few years, but yeah, appreciate being here. And this
is an exciting way to go through life. Didn't go to college either, just went straight on the road as a musician for what, 6 years or so?
The band was 9 years, but yeah, but 4 of those were high school. So we obviously had to keep it more local. And then yeah, for 5 years we toured all over the country.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit, but yeah. I'd love to know just what this last month has been like for you, just seeing it from the outside and then going back through your profile today. It seems like things have really taken off in a big way for you recently.
It's been wild. It's been a wild ride, and I've been reflecting on it. And honestly, at the end of the day, it's been cool, and I'm blessed that more people are aware of my art and my brand, and like Crayola has reached out and other big brands. But at the end of the day, I still wake up, go to my studio, turn on same loud music and like cut wood. And I think in the future here, it's just going to get easier, obviously, to lock in brand collaborations and pieces and hopefully get paid more for pieces and sell them, like, so I can make more of a living. But yeah, I'm super blessed and grateful that things have gone that way. And it's, between the content blowing up, and I'm glad it's just making people smile. Like at the end of the day, like, the video is going viral. If it has good intention and makes people emotional or smile, that's huge. Like the fact that millions of people have shed a tear or smile at something that I made is like a cool feeling.
I mean, it's intriguing content. Some of it's very uplifting. I know you've had mental health issues too, especially during COVID that you've dealt with. You've done pieces on that. You've done nostalgic pieces. You kind of lean into that, it seems, whether it's Crayola or you had a SpongeBob one go viral or some of that other 90s kid nostalgia stuff. I mean, you're playing into people's emotions, and I think that's one of the reasons why it's taken off so well.
1000%. And I always view, like, people are going to be on social media one way or another. They're going to be scrolling. If they're going to scroll past my stuff, I might as well make them smile or have a good feeling in their body. And nostalgia creates such a cool sensation for people. And if it reminds you, the fact that you can see a piece of art and me making something out of wood, and it can make you remember a place or a memory or any of your senses, and it can bring back something, is like just a cool thought for me to have of like, I'm helping people reintegrate hopefully a happier time of their life, or, you know, just a playful feeling, you know?
100%. We'll get back to some of your recent projects. Going back, graduating high school at 18, getting out of the house, just seems like you just kind of said fuck it and hit the road for five years or so. What was that time like for you?
I mean, our band, we started the band when I was 14. And
it's a metal band or what is it?
A hardcore metal band. Not everyone's cup of tea. And I literally used to walk around high school carrying a giant cardboard box with our t-shirts and our CDs. And I would carry it from class to class and try to hustle selling t-shirts and promoting our band. And it was a weird genre because like everyone in high school is like, you just get put in a box. Like, oh, that's the kids that have a metal band. And everyone thought it was cool and funny that we had a band and we were playing at the rave on like a Tuesday night, our sophomore year of high school, which is like a pretty crazy thing. Like I remember playing at the rave and then having to wake up at 7 a.m. for English class. And I was a sophomore.
You're playing at the rave at 15, 16?
Yeah, 15 years old, we started playing there.
It must have felt pretty cool.
It was wild, yeah. I mean, our band just, it kind of took off quick, and we just, I don't know, it was something wild. And then the second we got out of high school, our dream was to tour. And it was interesting because for 4 years we built up this band and this name, and I thought everyone was going to be like, hey, let's hit the road, let's tour. And right when we graduated, a couple of dudes were like, no, I don't want to travel doing this. Like, this is just a fun local thing. I'm like, oh, I was like, my dream was always to travel and play this all over the country, even if we're playing to five people, which what is what it was. So right after we graduated, we kind of like, some people left that were ready to go to college and move on. And then we just kept reforming the band with new members. So I was one of two people that stayed the entire 9 years of the duration.
Was touring what you thought it would be? You just referenced playing in front of five people.
The five people thing is the most true thing. Sleeping in your van and having no money and nothing to eat is very much the true thing. Yeah. But I didn't realize how accessible traveling and the country was. I didn't grow up in a family that did road trips or traveled or went on vacation. Our family just works and hangs out in Milwaukee. Like, I remember my first tour, we drove to Indianapolis and played a show, and then we played Ohio the next day. And then by the third day, we were in Buffalo, New York, and playing, and we went to Niagara Falls. And I remember calling my mom at 18 years old, and I was like, Mom, do you know you can just drive to Niagara Falls? Like, it was such a foreign concept to me. I was like, this is the greatest life ever. So it was a super cool scene. So many states and so many just things around the country and meeting people, and also having people come out to your show when you'd be 3,000 miles away from home and kids know your music. Like, even if there's only 20 kids there, if five kids knew your songs and your music, you're like, how did you find out about my band? Like, I'm an 18-year-old kid from Milwaukee and you're singing my lyrics, and we live 3,000. It was wild, and it opened up my eyes a lot about a lot of things in life, like how much putting out a form of art or expression can mean to somebody. Like, these, you know, these kids would come to our shows and there was like, you're our favorite band, we love this song because of X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, oh, we just start doing this because like playing music is fun. But the fact that it means something to you, like, and traveling the country and talking to people and having those conversations, like, it was just a cool experience. And I think it taught me a lot. Instead of going to college and having, you know, all the social things you get from college, the camaraderie and friends, I just learned that through music. So it was a wild time. And at 23 is when I exited, and then the band kind of dispersed from there thereafter. We never played a show again after that.
How hard was it to leave that behind? Or were you ready?
So surprisingly, it was very easy. For the 9 years I was in it, I was like, if I ever leave this is going to suck. I never want to get out of music. And then kind of within like a 2-3 month period, things were just kind of not going great with the band stuff. And my brother and I were talking about starting a business. So by the time I had to have the conversation with the band that I was leaving, it was like so natural and easy and like meant to be. So it was weird. I never thought it was going to be easy or fun, and it felt so right. It was wild.
And then you and AFW, your brother, started Junk Removal Company.
Yep. And we started it the day after. Literally, I had zero gap between music and our business. It was like a 12-hour period that I slept. And we started a business, and it was just him and I. And we went into it, and we scrapped together like $20,000. Invested what we needed to, and within 3-4 months we were the largest junk removal company within the original franchise that we bought into. And within a year we had over a dozen employees, like 3 or 4 trucks and trailers at that. I mean, it just blew up. But again, all we did was work and put time and energy and effort into it. Like, that's all we did for a year. And our initial goal, we went to our parents and said, if we start this business, because we had to get some money from our parents to start it, we said, hey, we'll pay you back within a year. I think it was like $20,000. Hey, we'll pay you back plus 10%. And our parents were like, how are you going to make enough money to pay yourselves and pay us back? And we're like, we'll figure it out. And we said, we're going to make $500,000 in sales this first year. And our parents thought we were crazy. That first year, we ended up doing over $900,000 in sales.
Damn.
And my brother and I had never been in business together, never owned a company, nothing. We did like $918,000 in a year. And it was like, just wild. We, again, a lot of hard work and understanding the industry and the market and just figuring it out every day. Like, we didn't have the answers. We just were, is the relentless pursuit of trying to figure it out.
I mean, AFW is a workhorse. It seems like you are as well.
Yeah, we're both workhorses in our respected manner. I was the guy who worked in the business. He worked on the business. So he would be out selling, getting people talking about it, getting employees X, Y, and Z. And then I was in the business running jobs as efficiently and profitable as possible, and really training the guys to be successful. And really it came down to like how we treated customers, and our customers became our sales force. Like Andy and I bred into our employees and within him and I just a good customer service experience. And that just translated very well into a market that normally doesn't have great customer service. And I was like, oh, all we have to do is just be nice and do the right things and not break stuff. Like, and we'll be get good reviews on Google. Like, it was pretty simple. So yeah, we went into business, and him and I were in business together for 5 years. And he still runs a business to this day. I branched off kind of around 2021 COVID era. I was just kind of branching off, but yeah, it's a family business still. So I'm still involved ish.
When did the wood artistry start for you? Has that always kind of been in the background a little bit, or did you just pick that up?
Yeah, it started the winter of 2017. I was dating someone at the time who was studying abroad for 6 months. And I was like, I'm going to need a hobby. Like, she's going to be gone for 6 months. I was like, I got to find something to do besides just my day-to-day junk removal business. So right before she left, I picked up a pallet on the side of the road, and it was like the era on Pinterest and Instagram of people taking pallets and turning it into coffee tables and this stuff. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it. It was like a random Tuesday night. I was like, I'm just going to try to cut wood and put something together. I was like, I don't know how to build furniture by any means, but I grew up using tools and being comfortable around tools. And I remember, I was like, I love the smell of cutting wood. I love the feel of it. When I used to work with my dad, like framing houses, I was like, it's something I enjoy. Why wouldn't I not do it on Tuesday night? And so yeah, I just picked up a pallet and built a coffee table. And it's still the coffee table I have in my living room. I never got rid of it. And I posted it on Facebook. I'm like, I built this tonight. And then a bunch of people were like, that's sick. Can you build me one and me one? I'm like, okay. And then started building coffee tables. And this was, 2017. And then like 4 months into it, I was scrolling online and I saw somebody make a wall art piece out of like a wood mosaic that sat on the wall. And I'm like, I want to do that. And it was as simple as that. And then I dove into it starting 2017, but I didn't really dive into it until 2021, till COVID hit. And it was just a weird hobby, like once a month, maybe for like 3-4 years, I would just kind of go into the garage and make something. But then 2020 hit, and we obviously had to create hobbies and create things for ourselves and do stuff outside of a normal social life. And I just stepped back into the garage and really started cutting. And that's when I started diving off into new ideas and like different wall art concepts. So, yeah.
And what happened to you health-wise during COVID?
So yeah, I got COVID twice, and it was the first or second? It was the first time I got it. 3 months after I got it, I had long COVID, which is pretty much retaining effects of the virus, and mine was 100% on the mental health aspect. So if people experience the brain fog, the lack of focus, the delusional, just like unaware of where you are every day type thing. If you experience that at all while you had COVID for those 6 or 7 days, typically I started developing those symptoms long-term. And I remember the day I felt it. Like I remember going to bed, waking up and experiencing life that day. And I felt different. And in 28 years of my life, I had never had a thought of anxiety or sadness. I just woke up super joyful and optimistic every day. And I was like, why am I like, I didn't even know what anxiety, I literally didn't even know what anxiety was. I had to Google what anxiety was. And I was feeling the feelings, but I didn't know what the thing was. And I started diving into it more and more, didn't understand it. There was no studies done on it yet because we were a year into having the virus. So it's been a challenge. It's still a challenge every single day. I've learned to adapt to it, take proper medication, but it's been self-discovery for 3 years now, which it sucked. I've had to quit art. I've had to move to a different part of the country. I've had to uproot my entire life and change my entire life to adapt to it. And that sucks, but I'm glad that I've figured out the formula now on the other side of it.
It is tough. At same age as you, I think I was 27 when I had, it wasn't the first bad panic attack in my life, but I never had any lingering anxiety issues. I maybe had two bad panic attacks before, and then a plane was stalled on tarmac, and I just never afraid to fly, and yep, never any like daily anxiety, and I just lost it and got off. Anxiety dissipated, but after that, I had to deal with all these lingering effects of not wanting or being able to fly again, which I had to work through and go to a lot of therapy.
Do you still have that?
Yeah, it's the struggle flying. So there's some things I do. Like when I was in therapy, elevators were hard and can be difficult for me, just claustrophobia.
Yep.
And I got locked in a car when I was young too and thought I was going to die. So that might have something to do with it. That was for like 45 minutes, but I got over that one. Even standstill traffic. So just like being stuck was difficult. And when you're doing a lot of those daily mental health exercises, it does get better. But yep, I have been traveling recently. I just take some meds when I fly and I can get through it. But yeah, it's stuff you need to work on every day if you want to get better, I feel. So I literally just got back into seeing someone for therapy for the first time in a couple of years, and I'm looking forward to that. And it's just good to be accountable and get in a routine.
Dude, and you have to have the willingness and the grace with yourself to accept where you're at with your journey, understand what things are happening in your day-to-day that might not be your best version of yourself, and then finding the help to treat it. And at my worst, I had to catch a flight out of here in a day's notice. I flew to California and looked for a clinic to help, you know, help me with my stuff. And I flew to Miami, and I was at a pretty much an inpatient clinic for 3 weeks and paid a lot of money to be there, and didn't even know if it was going to solve my problems, but I had no other choice. It was wild, but I did it. They helped me tremendously, and I've had to figure it out since, and I'm on different meds now, and now I'm living a very good version of myself, which I'm beyond grateful for, but it's taken 3 years to figure it out.
Yeah, proud of you, man. The the hard thing, too, with mental health is there's no real timetable either. It's not like you break an ankle and these are the PT exercises you need to do to get
better. It's so hard to keep track of. Like if you break your elbow, you can feel it every day. Okay, can I move it a little bit more? Or can I do this or that? But with mental health, like unless you keep a beyond steady life of everything staying the same and you can track it day after day of how do I feel just organically, it's so, because if you go experience something cool, obviously, you're probably going to be more happy that day, but that doesn't necessarily reflect how your mental health journey is going. So that is by far the biggest struggle, not being able to like track it every day unless you're just beyond honest with yourself, but also having the clarity and the focus to like be like, hey, where am I at with my journey, when like you might just be really sad and not want to think about what you want to eat right now. Like it's a tough thing to diagnose and figure it out.
It seems like diving into the wood artistry and doing that full time, it seems like you're very intrinsically motivated
that,
which I would think would help a lot. Just mental health wise, it's probably good for you to be doing something that you're immersed in.
And trust me, I knew things were bad when I didn't want to be in my studio. Wood art was my favorite thing, and cutting wood and listening to loud music and just like being in my zone. And when things were really bad with my mental health journey, I couldn't even walk into my studio. And I was like, oh, this is not good. Like I had so much anxiety being there. And I was like, okay, I got to rewire my whole life. I got to figure this out. So I years ago, I posted, I think it was like a year and a half ago. I posted a piece and I said, this is my last piece of art. I said, I finished it. It took me 6 months to finish it. I've had to take breaks. I posted, I said, this is the most important piece of art I've ever built because it might be my last one. I said, I'm leaving Milwaukee. I'm leaving my art. I'm going to just go to California and and figure life out. And thankfully I've been able to come back and reintegrate myself with it. But I was fully convinced that I wasn't coming back to this. Yeah.
It's a good story and an important one for anyone listening who is dealing with mental health, because it does show that however bad you are, you can get better if you do put in the work. It's not a permanent condition, but you have to keep putting it into. That's what I've realized too, like ever since that incident happened with me, which was probably 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
I'll go in spurts when I'm better and when I'm worse. And usually when I'm better, can at least have that better baseline. It's always when I'm doing the exercises on a daily basis, essentially.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%. I'm grateful, I'm in a very good place with my life right now, in a good headspace, and that's all I care about. Like, everything else happening externally is a bonus. There's a couple DMs this week, and especially like with the Crayola thing rolling around and just some other exciting stuff, people are like, hey, what was the coolest thing that happened this week? I was like, and I just reply very simply, I'm like, I'm happy. That's the coolest thing that happened this week. And I woke up today.
Yeah.
Like, everything beyond, like, at the root of it, when you can get to that level of self-awareness and perspective of life, that you got to wake up today and you're happy and stoked on life, like, everything else is just external factors and it's cool. I'm not trying to underplay it, but like, you being happy and living to your true purpose is, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all I strive for in myself, and I hope to integrate into other people's lives if they're willing to like explore that, you know?
Transitioning. So you hop on a plane to go to California, or you get out of the clinic in Florida, you go work for the Dream Factory.
Yep. Dream Machine Foundation.
Dream Machine,
yeah.
Excuse me. The Dream Factory is the building there, right?
And I was there the day we bought the building and the day we built it. Yeah.
Very cool. What was that like? And for those who don't know, do you just want to give them a 15-second rundown?
Yeah,
of what
Dream
it is?
Machine Foundation was founded by a dude named Charlie Rocket. It's pretty much a TikTok version of Make-A-Wish. So we would travel the country, we would pull up on people and make their dreams come true, like Mr. Beast style almost, of like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And somebody's like, I want to be a singer. And then we literally book them a festival and put them on stage, like crazy stuff. And we pull off these crazy events and raise money for people that have challenges in life, whether it was like kids with cancer, people that were homeless, just things that where life was beating them up. We would kind of go in and just turn them into internet celebrities and be able to raise money for them, create awareness for their problems, and just help them out for a few days or weeks. So I had found Charlie years ago, like 2017, thought what he was doing was super cool. I was like, I want to be a part of this someday, but I had no way of getting a hold of him. And he was fairly well known at the point or at the time. I had a chance to meet him. I was like, hey, I want to work for you someday. Years later, he called me up and said, hey, I need somebody. I was like, timing was just crazy. And so I went on the road with him for 6 months and we traveled the country. I was his tour manager, which I had done in music. And Charlie comes from a music background too. So we just kind of understood each other in the language. And he's like, I need somebody to drive my bus, handle the logistics from day to day, managing this creative team and making sure everyone can do their job. And I'm like, I can do that. That's super simple. So it was a team of 9 of us. We traveled the country and it was so organic. It was crazy. We'd pull up on people in a Walmart parking lot and say, what's your dream? And they're just like, I'm homeless, but I want to be a chef and I want to have a food truck. And the next day we would buy them a food truck and throw them an event and raise them $100,000 in a night. Like, that's just what we did every day. And it was crazy. So I worked for Charlie on and off the past 3 years in Los Angeles and then around the country. And when I did need to kind of leave art behind for a sec, I just called him up. I'm like, hey, I'm coming to fly to your house. He's like, we're not going on tour anytime soon. Like, I don't have work for you. I'm like, I didn't say I'm coming to work for you. I said, I'm coming to stay at your house and just get out of Wisconsin. So I'm grateful I had an outlet of inspiring humans and supportive humans. And some people on his team are my best friends in the world, to this day still. And I just kind of showed up to Los Angeles and then he bought the factory. We built that out. And then at one point he had to kind of let part of his team go and I was part of that. And that was a year ago. And Charlie and the entire team was just like, hey, you went through a lot with this mental health journey. We've been here and we've supported you, but it's, you gotta go, like, you gotta go home and tap back into this. You know, you're ready. And that was 1 year ago, almost to the day. And so I came home last April and I just said, I have to refigure this art stuff out. Like, I'm not gonna go back into business with my brother. I'm not gonna go work for Charlie anymore. Like, my art is, unless I'm gonna go get a job, the art is the only thing in my life right now. So the past year has been trying to figure it out.
Tell me about the last year. I'm guessing you're starting basically at zero with the art. And
I was grateful that I had built up a social media audience that was dedicated to me and my art.
How big was your audience at that point in time?
15,000, maybe 20,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they were like passionate about what I did. They understood it and it was weird. I was working for Charlie and I was making people's dreams come true and helping these kids with cancer. And the only messages I would get would be like, when are you coming back to your art? And the second I would come home, I would fly home for like Thanksgiving. I'd just visit my studio and post a photo and people are like, oh, you're doing your art again. Like, everyone would come out of the woodwork, no pun intended. And be like, oh my God, you're doing your art. And I'd get 100 DMs in a day. And I was like, I just helped a kid with cancer for a month and nobody cared at all. And now, like, I'm just back to building art and people are stoked. So it really spoke volumes to, like, even when things were small, that people cared a lot about it. And I was grateful for that.
Did you learn much working with Charlie from a content and marketing standpoint that you're applying to what you're doing today? You've gotten a lot of traction.
Yeah. I've always been curious and understanding of social media content and kind of why things work. But being around Charlie and the team, it ingrained it in me. And I learned a lot more, obviously. And also, too, like with my videos and my concepts, I mean, I talk to the people I'm closest with on his team every single day. We still keep in touch like best friends because we are. And so I bounce ideas off of them. They bounce ideas off of me. And I still have that sounding board. And I've just learned a ton from that experience. I've with all the things I've done in life, I just integrate different parts and moments, you know, my work ethic and working for my brother for 5 years and what that took. And going back to the band days and connecting with people on an artistic level, like just taking all these snippets from life to add up to like, okay, how am I going to show up to life today? And what do I know? And how am I going to apply it?
For those who don't know, I didn't really talk about this at the beginning. How's your style unique?
Oh, with my art?
Yes.
So I've never stained or painted or bought a piece of wood in my life. I don't ever really say that third part, but I've never bought a piece of wood. I've never stained or painted a piece of wood in my life. So from day one, it was always about picking stuff up off the side of the road and out of dumpsters and turning it into art, repurposing it before it went to the landfill. Because I come from a very eco-conscious household and upbringing, and our junk removal business is very eco-friendly. So that's just very been much ingrained in me. And I thought of it, I was like, when we think about art projects, even painting or whatever, you're like, oh, let's do an art project. Okay, step one, go to the store. Like, I wanted to eliminate that. Like, why is step one go to the store? The second you go and buy things, they have to replace things on those shelf, which takes, you know, resources and trucking and everything. Every time you buy a canvas or a paintbrush, they have to produce another one. And that's not good for the environment. So I was like, what if everything we need to create art already exists? And what if we can just pick up stuff that was an item, possibly multiple items in its life cycle, and right before it goes to the landfill, whether it's on the side of the road or in a dumpster, what if we can turn it into something new and give it a new life cycle? So that's always been the premise of how I started this journey. And before anyone on social media liked my art or I had a following or anything, at the root of it, that's why I was doing it. There was stuff on the side of the road and I wanted to turn it into something new. And to this day, I still don't paint anything, don't stain anything. I find it and I create it into something new.
Love it. Yeah. Let's go to the Crayola project. How did that come about? Did you think this would be a big hit? Why did you do it?
It was so funny. The night, it kind of came out of some thoughts. I was doing these film canister pieces, like Kodak film rolls. And a friend on social media was just like, why don't you do a rainbow colored one? Because I was making the yellow piece like interchangeable. She's like, what if it was rainbow colored? I'm like, that's a thought. And I had like almost every color of the rainbow from random furniture and stuff I had picked up. So I started matching them in my studio and I kind of stood back. I'm like, these colors are so bright and vibrant. I'm like, what is this reminding me of? Literally, I was like, this is my childhood, but I could not put two and two together. I'm like, oh, crayons and markers. And in my head, I saw the iconic Crayola like wave that's in every crayon and marker. So I was like, I've never thought about doing Crayola themed stuff, crayon stuff. And I called a woodworking friend and we were on the phone geeking out for 3 hours at 2 a.m. And I was like, what if I did a Crayola piece? And then she was like, what if you made crayons? I was like, what if I made a crayon piece of art? And we're like, what if we made the box? Like, and then I was like, what if I did the barcode on the back? What if a crayon? Like, it was the funniest conversation. And we're just geeking out. And then the next day I went to Target and bought a box of crayons, which it's funny, I don't buy art supplies for my art, but I needed inspiration. So I bought a box of crayons. And the next day I just started and I knew it was going to do well. Like Crayola is the brand of our childhood. SpongeBob piece went viral because it is, they have a monopoly on the market. SpongeBob is the TV show that everyone knows. Whether you're 8 years old or 80, everyone knows it. Crayola and crayons is, it's just a monopoly, you know? So at the end of the day, like, yes, I know the theme of it is going to go well, but that's not why I dive into it. I was geeking out over making a giant crayon box. And for 2 months, I didn't tell anyone I was making this piece. The internet didn't know. And I knew it was going to take around 200 hours, which it did take. It was 205 hours to make it. I was guessing between 160 and 200. And for 2 months, I sat in my studio geeking out every night. I was smiling. It was incredible. And I had so much joy building it, bringing these things to life, like the Preferred by Teachers banner. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world and nobody had seen it. So when it came time to present it about 2-3 weeks ago now, I knew it was going to be special. I did not know. You just never know, you know? I didn't know it was going to pop off like that. I'm fairly good at working the internet and doing things. And I was like, Crayola, I'm going to make Crayola reach out. I'm going to make them see it and make them reach out. That's like my goal. It's like, I kind of view life as a video game. Like, hey, can I do these things to make this happen? So I was like, I'm going to just make a really cool piece of art and get the internet on board with liking it, hopefully. And hopefully Crayola will reach out. And they did. And now we're talking.
How long did it take for that message to come in?
2 days, which... The first day, it was already very viral and blowing up, and they already.
Were you just like, when are they going to?
I'm like, Crayola, come
on,
pop in. Yeah, I don't like. It's just fun for me, you know. And honestly, in that 2 day span, so many other brands and agencies and other things hit me up. So it was weird. By the time Crayola finally reached out, my friends were calling and texting. They're like, we saw the comment. I'm like, the past 48 hours has already been insane. Crayola is kind of like the cherry on top now. Like they're not the whole pie. And my friends are like, what? I'm like, yeah, like crazy, right? So I am grateful. I'm looking forward to the conversations moving forward with them. There's by no means nothing set in stone. But they followed me. I had to follow them back on Instagram, which was kind of a weird power move. But yeah, I'm super blessed. And honestly, just the fact that they like it and I was super proud of the piece, which at the end of the day is what I care about. And I'm glad that everyone else thought it was a pretty cool piece of art.
One other piece I want to touch on, you did a Scrabble piece with the suicide hotline on it. Flew out to California, delivered it to a therapist. That video went very viral as well. I believe that was maybe a month ago. It wasn't too long ago.
Yeah, it was a month ago, yeah.
Crazy last month.
Is it? Tell me, yeah. And I'm trying to produce another crazy month coming up. Yeah, it's a game of chess, not checkers.
I'm glad we got you in here before you got too big for us.
No, not at all. I'll still always be in Milwaukee and living a very simple Milwaukee life. Like I don't ever I just sit in my studio in Milwaukee every day. And even when I do go out in Milwaukee, I love this community and like the simplicity of here. Because I've lived in LA, I've lived everywhere else where there's chaos happening and people are trying to push themselves to the top just to be at the top. And I kind of love the Milwaukee mindset of just like, oh, you're doing that? That's cool. Like, all right. Like, it's just chill and simplistic, and we love what we love, and it's great. And I'm always going to be ingrained in that here. And the next month, you know, I'm just trying to move pieces to make life more exciting. I do have another surprise in the works, but yeah, I flew out to California, and there was a follower of mine. She wanted to buy a piece of art for a different follower. Like, talk about a dedicated fan base. She said, I'll pay thousands of dollars for a piece for you to go surprise somebody. And I'm like,
that's cool.
That gesture alone is wild. So I said, I want you to find the person. Like, go find who I'm going to give this to, and I'll make the piece of art around it. So there was a lady, Linda. She was commenting on my videos, popping into my TikTok lives. And she's like, hey, Linda, she's like, I don't know her. I've never talked to her, but she seems really wholesome and dope. And she's a therapist in California. I'm like, perfect. I'm in California all the time. So literally made the piece of art, shipped it to a buddy's house, flew to California, Googled her name, showed up to her therapy office. We tried scheduling an appointment to see if she was going to be there, because I was like, what if we just show up and she's not there? And it was like an hour and a half drive outside of LA. So we invested, you know, some resources into it. And we literally just showed up at noon and walked in, and that's when the video started. It was as organic as you see it. There was zero behind the scenes planning aside from me making the art. And it wasn't even about the art at the end of the day. The piece of art is cool, and I'm stoked she has it. But seeing Linda's energy in person and, feeling who she was as a person, it was so cool. And she was so just such a motherly figure. And it was so great. And having, it's like 9 million people now across the internet have seen it and fell in love with her. And like, I'm glad that that happened. She deserves it. And now she has a piece of art to live with that memory. And also she did buy a piece of my art since then too. So it's great. And her and I talk probably on social media like every other day. She's incredible.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Few quick Milwaukee questions before we let you go. Any cool under the radar small businesses in Milwaukee that you like?
I mean, these boys, not necessarily even under the radar.
Brema.
I
knew him for a while back in the Misfit.
Yep. The days. Milwaukee Misfit days with Q and
Dids.
I just did it.
Izzy.
So I just, that Made in Milwaukee thing, it was a piece I did a few months ago. I had seen Dids for the first time in like 5 years.
He's a great guy.
He's good.
Him and Justin are good dudes.
Yeah. But yeah, these boys, it's super cool having a huge creative brand in Milwaukee, and seeing what they're doing is super inspiring. And I stop at the shop literally once or twice a week just to like say, hey, and we kind of like keep each other accountable in a weird way. Like, hey, what you got going on this week? All right, what you got going on this week? And we hype each other up, and just mad respect between our brands. So obviously these boys have my heart, but honestly, like, as much attention as my social media page gets and these millions of views, like, if somebody does comment, hey, I'm from here or here in Milwaukee, or especially putting the 262 area code on the barcode of the Gorilla box, it was super cool to connect with people that are from this community. And like, I'm always down to like, if I see those people or meet them organically. I was at a networking event last night, and this girl, Meg, her handle is Milwaukee Photo. And she came up to me and she's like, we haven't met, biggest fan. I'm like, no, I'm your biggest fan. Like, I was like, I love your page just as much. So connecting with people in Milwaukee, because we're not the most, when you think of Wisconsin, it's not like art and creative, you know, it's not that. And for what we do have, I appreciate it. And I just want to keep building up that name and that loyalty and that branding with our city and our state. We're actually 50th. In the country for art funding publicly, and 50th is last out of the 50 states. So I just want to like always say I'm from Milwaukee and put this city on the map with whatever we can do. And I know Brema has done a very good job of that with Unfinished Legacy, and I want to also just continue that and be a part of that.
You bring up 50th in the
art funding, I believe.
Art funding, yeah, in Wisconsin. Give Adam Bratz a shout out.
We used to work together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's doing some good things to help that right now.
Imagine MKE.
MKE. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
good dude trying to turn that title.
Yeah. And it's not something I'm even involved with. Like, I don't, obviously need funding for what I do, but I do want people in the city to be able to explore their artistic side. And if you're from here, like, I want you to be able to have artistic opportunities in life. So however we can do that in the city and put things on the map is we got to do it, you know? And like the music scene here is what I grew up with. And I'm grateful that we have things like Summerfest and these dope venues. But it could always use, you know, there's always room for improvement. And especially with our music and art scene, I would just love to see things just flourish over the next few years, however it can.
Love it. Well, thanks for popping down. Thanks for sharing your story. It was great to meet you in person and really cool everything you've done, not only on the mental health side, but now on the art and business side. So yeah. Great seeing you.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Milwaukee Uncut. If you enjoyed it, please write a review, subscribe, or share the show with your friends. That all helps us grow and enables us to do what we do here at Milwaukee Uncut. Also, for clips, check out Instagram or TikTok. For full episodes and more clips, check out YouTube. And just a reminder, Milwaukee Uncut is produced in Walker's Point by Storymark Studios in partnership with On Milwaukee and presented by Nicolet Law and Central Standard Distillery.